Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
I'm so happy to see everybody. I see so many familiar faces, some I haven't seen for a long, long time. Some new faces I've never seen, and I'm very happy to meet. I love how this works, how we all come together this way. We're in the middle of Sesshin, so those of you who came for the day, you'll find us maybe walking a little bit slower than usual and having little jobs to do that ordinarily you wouldn't see up here, because we're trying to keep it together and keep things going for a whole week. It's a wonderful experience. It's a luxurious experience, really, to be fed, and fed extremely well, three meals a day, and then to have a safe place in which to exercise those parts of ourself that hardly ever get touched, because we're so busy and we have so many things to do, and because our world is so busy and so noisy. So we come here for a week and sit in silence, walk in silence, eat and sleep in silence, work in silence, mostly. I recommend it to everyone. It's not easy. And I want to talk about that today, because life is not easy. And the first thing we notice when we sit down for a long time is how painful it is. We live so much of our life in our thoughts. It's almost as if we don't have a body a lot of the time. We're just always spinning where we're going to go next and what happened last and all the things that are going on and about to go on. And we don't even notice that we have a body. But sitting down like this, even for the 40 minutes we just sat, oh my goodness, something here, something that has a lot of issues, maybe. It has shoulders and knees and a neck. As we sit longer, of course, all those issues are exaggerated. Koban, my teacher, always said that we're always in pain. And we just do everything in our power to obliterate the noticing of it. So a lot of our thinking is to get rid of the noticing of it. Oh, I'm not going to think about that. And that's also true of thoughts in our mind. We have thoughts that we'd rather not face. So we just tell ourselves, oh, it's gone, I'm not there. Let's turn on the TV. And our body is the same. Oh, I'm just going to move. I'm going to get up and go get a Coke. I'm going to do something so I don't have to endure this. There's a bodhisattva called endurance. I often think of him. It's what we all really are up against in being a body, in as a mind. It takes great, great endurance. And Zen practice is about settling down and stepping back and beginning to face the things that we are trying to avoid so assiduously. We try and try. And what we see is how we try. There's so many, and they're very amusing, some of them. Oh, my goodness, look at me. I'm such a fool. I thought that was true, because I wanted it to be true. I thought, and I find in my life, now I still think that I'm very young. I do think that. I believe it strongly. And then it's a shock over and over again to realize, no, it's not true. It's not true. And if we think about our end, we don't like to think about that at all. We never do. It's too difficult and too mysterious, so we just don't. We just put it off. And unless we're very rare and generous and compassionate people, we don't even hang around dying people very much. It's depressing. And it's hard. What do you say to somebody who's dying? Because the body does do that. Every single body does do that. And we don't know when. We don't know how. It's part of the mystery. So sitting provides us with the chance to be truly straightforward and clear and honest about our condition, first of all. First of all, as a body on the earth, with components of water, air, earth, and fire, we burn. That's what life is. It's a burning. Everything is burning. We're an emergence. We keep emerging from we don't know where. And burning up. But we're water. Our tears are salt. We're mostly water. And air. And earth. So our effort is, in the beginning, to try to transcend whatever's happening. And it doesn't work if you are sitting quietly and you think you can get out of it in some way. You can stop thinking. You can stop hurting. And you can tell your mind, okay, now I'm just not going to think anymore. I'm just going to sit here really, really quietly. Oh, I'm peaceful. I'm tranquil. And it doesn't work. It just doesn't work. That kind of thinking that we keep noticing is not a peaceful and tranquil place, particularly. We have it with our body, too. We have itches. And we tell the itch, go away. Go away. You're getting in the way of this peaceful, tranquil feeling. And it won't go. I had a friend years ago who sat with a knee that was just killing him. And we consulted about it, and I told him, you know, you don't want to be hurting yourself, you don't want to break the meniscus or anything like that. He said, no, it's really okay. It's just bugging me. It's just bugging me all the time. And finally, he kept telling the knee to stop it. Just stop it. and it wouldn't. And finally, on the last day, he said, okay, just do it. I don't care anymore. Just go and do it. And it stopped. Itching will stop that way, too. Just let it itch, and it will go away. Even poison oak will do that. So we think we can will our lives, that we have some kind of special power that gives us the way to orchestrate our life and run it. And in many ways, we do have many powers, fantastic powers. We can fly airplanes. We can drive cars. We can make cars. We're very, very clever little animals. But we are animals too. Beautiful animals in our own way. The Greeks thought we were beautiful. In every size and shape, we're beautiful. And yet we suffer. We suffer as bodies and minds. As the body-mind. There's no one word for it, but it is one thing. It's just this. And it's just this where it is. It isn't where it was an hour ago. It isn't where it's going to be a minute from now. It's just right here, right now. So, of course, this is a tradition that goes back to our great Shakyamuni Buddha, who grew up in a world where it was believed that you could transcend the body, that you could just get out of this into a realm of bliss. And he tried for years with every kind of way of torturing the body into submission so it wouldn't be a problem anymore. And when he was almost gone, he was mostly a skeleton by then because he didn't eat anymore. He realized that maybe there was something else. He remembered being a child and sitting in the garden and how peaceful it was just to sit there in the garden. And he thought, maybe there's another way. Maybe I don't have to beat this thing up so much. So a woman came by and offered him food, and he took it. Disappointed his pals. They were very annoyed with him. And then he said to himself, I think I'll just sit down and see. And he sat down for a long, long time under a tree, they say. Cousin of the tree still sits, still grows where he did that. And he had all kinds of experiences, as we do. The mind was turning and turning and turning things up and turning things down and showing things that are hard to see. It's called Mara in the old books. Mara keeps coming, saying, here are all these sexy girls. Why don't you just go out and dance with them? Forget this stuff. You don't want to see all these things. And he would say, I see you, Mara. I see you. And Mara would say, zounds, he sees me. And he runs away. But he comes back with many temptations. Money, fame, owning the world. all the things that we could do if we wanted to, all the things that we use to distract us from what it is to be this present person, body, mind. To be this one as it is. As it is superficially, as how it appears to others. We think we know how we appear, but we don't really know how we look or how we look to others. That is very weird to me, but it's the truth of it. We just don't know so many things, and that's one of them. And we have assumptions about how we look. Oh, they must think I look dot, dot, dot. But that's not how it is. Check it out. You can ask people, am I really, really ugly? And they say, are you kidding? You know, I say, no, no. Am I too fat? Am I too thin? Am I too giddy or whatever? And people will say, no, no. Just be yourself. Just be this. It's okay. So really, in a way, that's a great deal of what Buddha found. Buddha found himself because he found what he called the house that he had built, the assumptions that he had made about being himself. Oh, this is me. And here are the supports, and here's the roof, and here's the door. And sometimes we walk around with a locked door for many years. And he said, the house is taken down. So what is that to be a taken down house? It sounds like then, oh, we're nobody. And in a sense, that's the truth of it. That's what Emily Dickinson found out. I'm nobody. Who are you? Are you nobody too? Then there's a pair of us. Don't tell. They banish us, you know? How dreary to be somebody. How public, like a frog, to tell the truth, the lived long day out of a muddy bog. It's something that we cannot explain, but it's something that we can experience. As we live, we are always meeting the grass, meeting the air and the sky and the clouds, meeting each other, meeting our life. And if we're honest and authentic, we don't have to be somebody special or particular. We can be the special, particular one that we already are. We don't have to add anything, paste anything extra on us. Because then it's not so even so interesting on either side, actually. Then we're being, you know, sort of cocktail party kind of meeting. And we don't need to do that. So we learn how not to do that here. And then we can do that even at the checkout in the grocery store. Or in the office. We can just offer ourselves. Because that's the other thing, that it's not about getting something. We always think we'll be safe and we'll be okay and we'll be peaceful if we can just get a little bit more of something. And when we come to sit zazen, that's the first thing that happens. We think, oh, now I'm going to sit and now I'm going to have a really good experience. I'm going to get something. And then we sit and get more and more frustrated because it isn't like that. It's about giving it away. It's about generosity. And generosity is a very complex kind of thing. We can be generous by accepting somebody else's generosity. Saying, yes, you can help me. Thank you. Sometimes that's harder than our being generous ourselves. And that's a gift. That's our gift that we can give. We give ourselves in that way so that we don't have to be somebody particular. We can just be whatever needs doing. So there's a practice. Friend of mine is a Korean teacher. He's not Korean at all, but he has a Korean teacher, and he himself is a very fine teacher. And he reminds me of a practice that they have in Korean Zen of only don't know. We know so much, and we need to know a lot, especially in this day and age. We need all the information that we can get. But in the end, only don't know is the essential truth of our life. If we go out into the world thinking that we know and not be willing to understand what's coming to us, not being able to accept what's coming through us, then we are plunged into ignorance, into a basic ignorance. So having a mind of not knowing is very, very helpful, especially in situations that are really, really difficult. Or I have to make a decision, and there's this, and there's this, and it doesn't add up. And sometimes we have to wait a long time. Or sometimes we can just take a kind of stand in our mind about it. And that's what I brought today, which impressed me very much. It's by another Tibetan, this is a truly Tibetan teacher, Anam Tupten, who is the abbot of Sweetwater Sanctuary in the Big Sur Wilderness. And it's called Dancing with Nature's Wrath. So Brahne's fire is burning everything that gets in her way. She is merciless. She is magnificent from a distance. The thick smoke turns the mountain more majestic than ever. Night is lit by red light that keeps eyes glazed forever by its magic. The famous Big Sur is dramatic now in blazing fire along with sky, wind, and sea. She does not listen to our prayers. She does not spare anyone's begging. She is raging with cosmic wrath, burning a paradise on earth, a place we cherished with our hearts. Sweetwater Sanctuary, Right now, our hearts are burning not with fire, not with anger, not with sadness, but with compassion. The folks who lost their homes, may they find comfort in the kindness poured out by others. The innocent animals who are terrified, may they find safety from the danger. The firefighters, may all the good forces gather to make sure they are not in harm's way. And never forget the redwoods, happily spreading their seeds. Many baby trees soon are going to grow. The whole host of earth spirits are dancing to welcome nature's rejuvenation. Is this good or bad? Let's try not to find an easy answer for everything. Let's stay with the not knowing. Many found true freedom by surrendering to the not knowing. This is indeed an ancient secret that liberated thousands of hearts. There's time for questions, discussion. Maybe they're here from there. Just don't know.
When you mentioned working at hospice, and yes, it is sad and so forth, but myself and my students work at Maitri Hospice, and we found it to be the most joyful place, because usually people are very stuck on their own lives,
yes,
and this life and what I'm doing and all the rest, but people who are facing death usually have come to terms with it if they have a long enough time, and it's the most joyful, happy place. I highly recommend anybody who wants to volunteer. It's actually, it's real.
Yes.
As you say, it's authentic. People
yes.
are authentically themselves. There's nothing left to pretend.
You can't
so
pretend.
So I just wanted to recommend, I mean, it's, I think it's a very happy job to do, actually.
Thank you, Jana. Yes, that's true. I know that's true. Did you all hear out there? Out in the hostings?
The woman behind Jonah had a question.
Oh, sorry.
So I can see there's immense value to staying in the not knowing place. But if you live in the world, you do eventually have to take some kind of action or make a decision. So I was wondering, what do you think, how do you think that process happens from flowing into that place into actual action?
It's a very good question, and that's the most essential one. I mean, we can sit till the cows come home, but that's not going to do any good. And we can have marvelous experiences and golden lights and everything, but that's not going to do any good. No, the whole thing is to be able to walk out with the same kind of mind and meet whatever comes and not think about it so much. You have to think some, of course. You have to figure it out and add up all the numbers and all the, those kind of things. But if you have to decide something, whether to do something or not, often the best way is to let it come from a different place than your thought mind, your figuring out mind.
Okay.
People call it instinct, and I don't think it is. I think it's wisdom, that we have a depth of wisdom that we never, ever hardly touch because we're so busy thinking things through. So if we allow wisdom to rise, sometimes it'll be a completely different answer from what thinking will give us.
So yeah. Are you kind of suggesting we leave a space always?
Yes.
For that part of ourselves to speak, and otherwise we still have to function normally.
Absolutely.
We just kind of quiet it down, so the small quiet voice.
Exactly. Perfect. Thank you. That's excellent. Yeah.
Angie, that question and your reply reminds me of one of my favorite Colbinisms from my early years in Santa Cruz when he shared with us that said after my talk, forget my talk. I don't want you to remember it. I just want you to get up and know what to do next.
Yes. Yes. Most important. And he also said, it's all up to you. It's all up to you.
When you were speaking about hospice, I've worked in hospice just a little bit, and I had almost a kind of envy, and it came up when you were speaking, when there's no more choices to be made,
yes,
and just be. And I almost wish that, and I have a glimpse that I can live that way, as if all the choices are done.
Mm-hmm.
And in that window, actually there's endless freedom. However,
yes.
I'm still in the middle of my life where there's significant choices to be made.
Mm-hmm. And so it's hard.
Yes.
It's just hard. Just because we I'm offering don't know mine doesn't mean I'm offering pain-free life, because it's not like that. It just has to be difficult. And sometimes we make mistakes because we really don't know. And in making a decision, that's why we think so hard about it, because we think if we think it through, we won't make a mistake. But I think allowing wisdom to inform us is much a better way to go. Using the thinking as it helps, but not to relying on it in any way. We say in the Heart Sutra, depend on Prajna Paramita. Depend on wisdom. And let our thinking help us. Yeah, but it's painful sometimes. They're painful decisions to make, and they're horrible mistakes to make. You know, and a lot of our language needs to be, I'm sorry. You know, please forgive me. And then we go on. Yeah. Thank you.
And I'm just wondering, having just spent this time just sitting and trying to just quiet down the chatter, busy planning, whatever mind. And so I've been, even though I, you know, might just focus on the breathing in the nose or out the mouth or the stomach and the short, I mean, and trying to feel the breath and not think about it, I think I find there's still some overlay there. But I felt yesterday evening from spending all those zazen periods, having not done much sitting recently, that I guess brought me to a kind of peaceful place, and I felt it really imperative to make a short phone call to a relative who's difficult, from a generosity of heart space to cause a little less stress in the family. And I decided, yeah, I'm going to break the vow of not, this seemed important enough from this sort of quiet place. And it went quite well. And I'm wondering if that's kind of the action that we're talking about. Because I'm thinking I'm breathing. I'm thinking, even though I feel my chest going in and out and my ribs and my shoulders relaxing, there's still language involved. I don't know if I can ever get away from it, but I did feel like I sunk to a place, even with that what's happening, where I got off the cushion and made that phone call, and maybe that's the best I could do. Can you comment about that language thing? Do you ever get where your actual brain is for more than a breath?
Well, Dogen's advice is to think not thinking.
Yes, I understand that.
So, you do. Do you?
Wow.
Will you explain it to us? It's pointing somewhere.
Pointing.
Yes.
I'm curious about how one can honor their wisdom and still coexist with another's wisdom. So holding space for an intuitive or an intuit, but also not rejecting.
Oh, real good question.
Someone else's. I'm getting even really emotional, but how to coexist with the wider wisdom,
yes,
without losing. It reminds me of experiences I've had meditating where when I would fall more into my senses and notice that was just as distracting as falling into my thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was trying to find a space between or together. I don't know which it was, but
you can't do it.
It's impossible.
You can't do those kind of things. You can offer yourself to it in zazen. Just offer yourself to the whole thing and really see what happens. And be that offering to everything that you meet and see what happens. So in relationship, it means offering yourself to the wisdom of what you meet. Your wisdom to that wisdom. To their wisdom. And being willing to see that and experience that and share that. So it's work, relationship is, especially on such a deep level. And it doesn't always work. Some people aren't able to go with you. So we don't have to compare. We're not any better than anybody else. We're all equal. So we don't have to compare either. If we have what we feel isn't understanding and somebody else doesn't, they're still Buddha. And they still have deep understanding as well. So recognizing that and studying it more, studying yourself more and the other one also. So it's less and less a superficial relationship. which means it might get farther and farther apart, as well as it might get closer and closer. Again, we're so mysterious in the way that we work.
That feels like dying.
Yes. Yeah. But it's not our wisdom, and it's not their wisdom. It is the wisdom that's all of us. Are we done?
I have a question. I'm somewhat of a beginner, and I haven't done much reading on sitting. But when I sit, sometimes these magical things come to me, right?
Yes.
These realizations that when the thoughts float out, then this smile comes almost. And sometimes that's a smile about what I'm thinking about, and then a smile about what I'm feeling, or letting go of feeling. And then sometimes there's this place where the smile's just about something else, like you're tapping in to something else.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm trying to make sense of that. But then that's a intellectual understanding of the experience. So I'm trying to I'm wondering if reading, so the structure can cement the experience, or like the words can cement the experience, or if you have the experience and then you go and find some words to help you make sense of it, or if it's better just to sit and let the stuff come. So
that's a good question.
I don't want to pollute what's unfolding, but I don't want to splash about in the shallows when I can learn how to swim.
Well,
once I go there, I can't come back.
That's a real good question. I think it's a real, really essential question. If you're serious about practice, you really don't want to read at first. It's like reading about swimming before you've even been in the water.
Yeah.
You have to swim around a lot and learn the breaststroke and the backstroke and swim like they do in the Olympics or something. And you're really, really familiar with sitting. So maybe a year or so. And then you do need words for it. And if you read the old respected words, we don't have a book like a lot of religions do. We have many teachings, and if they're authentic teachings, you will resonate with them. They're like a Dharma talk. They're not like information that are going to tell you what's going on in your brain to make you smile. You can read about that somewhere else, but you can read about what this is. And that's very important. This is a Dharma practice. This is a practice around an enormous truth that is so big it can't be said. And so it's important to find ways of evoking at least an experience of that, if not an understanding. And there are many wonderful writings many wonderful talks that people have given through the centuries, the millennia, that can be very, very helpful. Good question. Yeah, thank you.